Morning. Today's daf in Shavuos is Yud Zayin. We are in Tez Zayin. We're going to start on the very top of Tez Zayin Amud Beis at the top line, Nitma Ba'azara. So we're going to be talking about somebody who becomes Tamei in the Azara. Okay, let's try to make this point clear. The person becomes Tamei outside the Azara and he goes into the Beis HaMikdash. If he does so, Bishogeg, he is forgot about his Tumah, forgot about the Beis HaMikdash. So under those circumstances, just the mere fact of going in is now going to create a liability. And if he does so, Bishogeg, so then he's going to be Chayev Carmen Oliviore, and there's no question of lingering. There's no loitering. There's no lingering. Just the mere act of going in of itself now creates this creates a tumah, and creates a tumah, creates a violation of the Torah of a person being mitame the Beis HaMikdash. And so that point is clear, and the psukim are clear, and that we know. What we're going to be discussing over the course of today's daf is the following: when the person becomes tame while being in the Beis HaMikdash itself. So under those circumstances now, there are two considerations which we're going to be talking about over the course of today. One is a time consideration. If there's a shihiyah, if there is a lingering, he just simply pauses while becoming tum inside. So again, if done b'shogeg, so he's going to be chayav karban olaviyorid. And as we'll be discussing later this morning, if he's been mazed, maybe there's the same thing to take into consideration, which we'll talk later on. A second consideration is that if he becomes tame while inside the azara, so then there's a question of exit strategy. What path does he have to take out? So as I'm sure you and I have heard over a number of times, the straightest path between two points is a straight line. And so he's got to take that straight line, or as the straightest line he can, to get out of there. Once he makes the detour in terms of exiting, if his exit strategy involves a little bit of a spatzir, circuitous route, right, the scenic route, so to say. So he's also going to be chay for that as well. Okay, but right now we're starting at the very beginning of this whole discussion, and the first thing the Gemara really wants to establish is, where do we know this? Meaning, how do I know that there's such a distinction between becoming tamei outside and then going into the Beis HaMikdash? Where there, the psukim are very clear. The Torah says, Rashi on the very top of the Amud quotes the pasuk, "V'lo yitam'u es machaneihem." You can't be matame the machane. Meaning that if you're tummy and then you go in, that's clear. That's clear cut. That is an act of defilement. We're talking now about becoming defiled in the Azara, and then what? In other words, you didn't defile the area. You're already in there. And now you're in there, and now you're either going to get a liability for either lingering or for not taking the shortest path out. But where is this coming from? Where the psukim speak to this idea? So that's the first thing we're going to be discussing today. We're on the very top of Tezayin Amud Beis. Nitma Ba'azara V'Nelma Mimena Tumah. You become tummy in the Azara with the Halama. And again, either for Shihiyah or for not taking out the straight path, you're going to be Chayev. So Tumah Ba'azara Minala. So the first question of the Gemara. Where do we know this? Where the psukim indicate that you're going to be Chayev for this? Clearly, even without the psukim, the psukim the Gemara is going to quote. Clearly, there is an idea, which I think is intuitive, that if you become tamei in the Azara, of course you should exit, of course you should leave. Meaning the argument, the logic goes, is that if you can't walk into the Beis HaMikdash while tamei, so if your tumah occurs while you're already there in the Azara, so of course you should leave. But the question becomes, how do I know that the liability is going to be similar, or in this case, the same? You're going to be chayav karban olaviyorid. You didn't defile the Azara, so the Gemara starts off the discussion. Tumah Ba'azara Minalan Amar Belazar Kasevechan Omer Es Mishkan Hashem Timei V'Kasevechan Omer Ki Es Mikdash Hashem Timei. Now, it really is the two psukim the Gemara quotes are very similar to one another. Now, in the parentheses, you see the words Imeno Inyan. It's as if to say, since there are two psukim that speak to the idea. So therefore, what we're going to do is basically apply the second pasuk, which is an extra pasuk, to not for the person who walks into the Azara while tamei, but for the person who becomes tamei while in the Azara. So the Gemara says, Ukra miyasrihi. So the Gemara then asks the question, I'm going right after the parentheses. You mean to tell me that the psukim are extra? So I'm mitzvah. It's not true. I need the psukim. Why? Detanya, Rebbe Lazar, Omer im ne'emar mishkan, lama ne'emar mikdash, vim ne'emar mikdash, lama ne'emar mishkan. The Torah, in describing this iser of not defiling the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah uses the words Mishkan and it uses Mikdash, and they're both necessary. Why? Ilo ne'emar Mishkan v'lo ne'emar Mikdash, ha'yisi omer al Mishkan ye'chayev sharei mashuch b'shem na'mishcha. The Mishkan has something special and unique, albeit it's true that the Mishkan is a temporary dwelling place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for the Shechin of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but on the other hand, as we learned just a short couple days ago in the Daf, so when we're anointing the Kelim of the Mishkan, we're doing so with the Shem na'mishcha. We just learned a couple days ago in the daf that when we're anointing all future kelim, it's not with the Shemna Mishka. So the Mishkan is something which is special and unique. However, but for the Mikdash, where the kelim are not anointed through the Shemna Mishka, so maybe, the argument could be, it's not as special. On the other hand, you could talk about how the base of Mikdash is more special because the Kedusha is a permanent Kedusha. It's an interesting Rashi over here. Rashi says, what does that mean that the base of Mikdash is a permanent Kedusha? Meaning once the base of Mikdash is set up, Ein achare et abama. So you can't put up a bama after the base of Mikdash is set up. Meaning before the base of Mikdash was set up, right, there were historical periods of time where you and I in our backyards could set up, not here outside of Eretz Yisrael, but you and I could set up like a little altar in our backyards, a little mizbeach, and we could offer a little bit of mizbeach in our backyards. This is heter bamos. Once the Beis HaMikdash is set up, from that point going forward, heter bamos is no longer allowed. So you see that the Beis HaMikdash has something with them, which quite frankly the Mishkan doesn't have. Even after the Mishkan was no longer around, one was allowed to set up a bama. So, lekach ne'mar mishkan. So that's why it says mishkan. Ve'ala mishkan lo yechayev, lekach ne'mar mishkan, lekach ne'mar mikdash. That's why it says mishkan, and that's why it says mikdash. So far, what the Gemara has essentially argued is that I need both psukim. One pasuk is talking about the mishkan, the other one's talking about the mikdash. Each one has something that the other doesn't, and therefore, that's why I need both psukim. If that's true, so now what? We were looking for that second pasuk to come teach me, not for the person who becomes tameh outside and enters in a state of tumah. We were looking for that second pasuk to teach me for the person who becomes tameh while already in the azara and doesn't make a beeline out of there. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Lazar hachi kakashli. The Gemara says, yeah. Rabbi Lazar was bothered by the following: Michti, Mishkan, Ikre, Mikdash, Mikdash, Ikre, Mishkan. Rabbi Lazar says, yeah, but we also have another principle, which the Gemara quotes a number of times, and that is that the terms Mikdash and Mishkan are interchangeable terms. Nichtov, idavi de Mikdash, idavi de Mishkan. So if what the Torah wanted to do was tell me that this halacha applies to both Mikdash and the Mishkan, yes, I do need two psukim, but no, I don't need one pasuk to say Mikdash and the other to say Mishkan. I could just simply have either both saying Mikdash or both saying Mishkan. Mishkan, Mikdash, lamali. Why would the Torah then have to say Mikdash and Mishkan? Shema minat tarte. So we're going to learn out 2 points. One, we're going to learn out this halacha of being tameh while already in the Azara applies to both Mikdash and Mishkan. And two, that in fact there is a halacha that you're going to be chayev even if your tumah occurred not outside and then you entered, but even if already after having already entered, you become tameh inside as well. Okay. Where do we find this idea that Mishkan and Mikdash are interchangeable? The Gemara goes over this point as well. The Torah, the end of Vayikra, goes on to describe how we're going to build the Mishkan. But that's not a reference to the Mishkan. That's a reference actually to the Beis HaMikdash. Ela Mishkan de Ikre Mikdash Minalam. Where do I see that the Mishkan was referred to as a base, as using the terminology of Mikdash? So Elam and Bidichsiv and Nasu Akasim Noseh Mikdash. Well, maybe it's by virtue of the fact that the pasuk says that the kahasim were carrying the mikdash. The Gemara says, yeah, but that's not talking about the actual edifice. It's talking about Ahu ba'arun ksiv. That's talking about the actual arun, which is what they were carrying on the shoulder. So the Gemara quotes from the beginning of Parshas Truma that we're going to build a mikdash uksiv kecholashi nemarascha estavnis hamishkan. And meanwhile, contextually, that pasuk is not talking about the base hamikdash; it's talking about the mishkan. But you see that the Torah, when describing the mishkan, uses the words mikdash. Fine, mikdash and mishkan are interchangeable terms. Okay. Now we are. So let's be clear about the scenario. So you become tameh while already inside the azara. Okay, and it's very simple how that happens. There's a sheretz. The sheretz died somewhere within the in the vicinity of the mishkan. And you touch the sheretz, and that's all you need. A negia, the sheretz is all you need to become tameh. And now you're tameh, not before walking into the azara, but having already been in the azara, you're now tameh. So what now is going to create a liability? So the Mishnah said, if you bow, or says the Mishnah, if it takes the time to bow. Okay, now explains the Gemara. So really what we're talking about over here is lingering. not leaving right away. The path of exit is something which we're going to be discussing a little bit later. Right now, our main focus and point is going to be regarding the act of lingering. So lingering can be one of two things. Either just simply not leaving, meaning not walking out, or bowing, and as we'll see in just a moment, it has to be the kind of significant bowing which also will represent you're just simply lingering in the Azara too long. The Gemara starts off the discussion. We're in the middle of Tzayin Amud Beis. Gemara says, Yishachava or Shashaka Kedei Yishtachava. So the Mishnah taught us that either bowing or the amount of time that it takes to bow is considered now a period of lingering in which you're now going to be chayiv. And again, B'shogig, you're going to be chayiv karban olav yared, and seemingly, B'mezid, you're going to be chayiv karis. Okay. Amar Rav Loshanu Elosh Yishachava Kapei Panim. Now we said the act of bowing. The act of bowing by itself is going to create a liability. You have to bow kalpe panim interior. But if you bowed exterior, shaha in lo shah lo. So the bowing by itself is insufficient. If you're bowing exterior, that's not considered a significant bowing. Hopefully I'll be able to better explain that in just a moment. But if you're bowing exterior, so that's not considered significant. So what's going to now create the liability? Just the time interval. So if it's the time interval that would bring about a liability, which is the time that it takes to bow, so then you're going to be chayiv, otherwise you're not going to be chayiv. Okay, now, what's this business about bowing interior versus exterior? The Gemara's language is kapi panim versus kapi chutz. Once again, I turn to Rashi, I quote the Rashi. Rashi writes when it comes to kapi panim, Rashi only writes two words, letzad mara, if you're bound to the west. However, kapi chutz, says Rashi, is lemizrach, you're bound to the east. If you're looking at the Beis HaMikdash, here's what you're going to find from a compass standpoint. As you're going in a westward direction, meaning if you were to walk into the temple courtyard and you're walking westbound, you're going to find that the more west you walk, with a couple of exceptions at the end, but the more west you walk, the more elevating kedusha you're going to get. Actually, it's a physical ascent. That's number one. And number two is that it's more, you're going to meet more and more kedusha. Right? Again, I know I'm going to create a visual picture over here. We're going to just a virtual tour, so to say. So in other words, as you walk in westbound, I'm going through the Sharni Kanur, through the opening gate of the eastern side of the Azara. So now you're actually in the Azara proper. Now, as you continue walking westbound, so the first thing you're going to be hitting is the Mizbech HaChitzon. You're probably going to have to walk around it, although the Gemara Midos has it, kind of as like a moving target exactly where it is in a north-south, on the north-south plane. But anyway, you're going to keep now moving westbound, and then you're going to see the Ulam. You're going to see the Ulam of the Beis HaMikdash. It's the antechamber of the Beis HaMikdash with its big opening door. You're going to keep now walking westbound. You're going to go through this antechamber, and then you're going to actually enter into the Heichal. As you go into the Heichal, so you're going to see the Kelim and the Beis HaMikdash, the Menorah, the Shulchan, the Mizbeach HaPanimi. You're going to see the big paroches. You're going to keep walking westbound. I mean, none of us are allowed to do this, but you're going to keep walking westbound, and now you're going to hit the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the more west you go, the more you're going to be hitting more and more Kedusha. Now there is, in the Bayi Sheni, there's going to be an 11 Amah from the Kodesh HaKadoshim to the actual western wall of the Azara, but for our purposes right now, all we need, that's the basic idea. So if you're bowing in the western direction, this is a simple pshat of Rashi, if you're bowing in the western direction, that is considered a significant ishtachavaya. And even if in terms of a time interval, you do it real quickly, it doesn't matter. Meaning that's significant enough where you're now going to be chayiv. You're going to be liable. And if you, after having become tummy in the Azara, now you make a western bow, so that is a significant act, and even if it's quick, doesn't matter, you're going to be chayiv. However, if you bow in the eastern direction, again, simple pshat and Rashi, if you're bowing in the eastern direction, that's not a significant act of bowing. As a result of that, you're not going to be chayiv for the act of bowing itself, and then it's just going to be a question of interval. If the amount of time that you're just standing there and not exiting is the amount of time that a regular person would bow, so then you're going to be chayiv. The why question over here is not, I mean, it's an important question, but I'm not interested in motivation right now. I'm just interested right now in establishing the Gemara's criteria of what is considered lingering. So lingering can be established either by a time interval or by an act of bowing. But what the Gemara is teaching us is it's got to be a significant act of bowing. why he's doing it. It's for our purposes right now. That's not critical. Okay, back to the Gemara. So Amar Rava Lo Shana Lo Shela Shishach VeKape Pinim Avishach VeKape Chusha In Lo Shalom Iged Amasin Asefa. Now we're going to do the same thing, but basically we're going to take the comment of Rava and not apply it to the first part of the Mishnah, but the second part of the Mishnah. Oh Shishah Bichtei Shachava. So now we're talking about the actual time lapse, the interval. Mechlaldi Shachava Gufa by Shia. So that seems to indicate that when bowing you require Shia. Amar Rava Lo Shana Lo Shishach VeKape Chutz. So yeah, even when you bow, there has to be a time interval, but that's if it's an insignificant bowing. Meaning, again, you're bowing in the eastern direction. Avakapi pnim, but if you're bowing in the western direction, afagav dosha, even if you don't have a time interval. So even if your active bowing is real quick, but because the active bowing is significant, so therefore you're going to be chayev. V'achi kamar, yishachav akapi pnim, o sheshakide yishachav, b'achi shachav, dekapi chutz, chayev. Okay, so, and that's how you read the Mishnah. That when you're bowing kapi chutz, when you're bowing eastbound, so the act of bowing in and of itself is not significant, and then it's just a question of time interval. Now, we keep talking about time interval. What is the time interval? Hechidam ishtachava dis beishiyah. Vehechidam ishtachava dis beishiyah. So, dis beishiyah zukriya ba'alma. He. So, the Gemara says, well, when we're talking about a quick bowing, we're just talking about kriya ba'alma, right? Literally a bending of the knees. As opposed to a bowing that does create a proper time interval, so that would be getting down on the floor, your hands and feet are all spread out. My picture of it looks, you know, to us it looks foreign, but again, we don't, you know, it's not something that we're used to. The closest thing we have to this is the bowing we do on Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but even then, though, it's not, we're not flat out on the floor and our hands and feet spread out. V'kamashir shiya. Now, can we put this in terms of times? Now, the Gemara, whenever Gemara talks about time as a, you know, as a unit of measurement, the Gemara does not talk about minutes and seconds. They for sure had something even back then that was some sort of measurement of time. But generally speaking, as the Gemara often does, when the Gemara talks about a measurement of time, so either it will talk about the time it takes to get from point A to point B. That's normally the way the Gemara describes the measurement of time. Here, however, we're talking about a short unit of time, so the Gemara is going to measure it in terms of how long it takes a particular to say a particular pasuk. Now, I know it's kind of funny because it really depends on who's reading the pasuk, but pligi bar Rav Yitzchak bar Nachman v'chadi imei oman Rav Shem ben Pazi v'amila Rav Shem ben Pazi v'chadi imei oman Rav Yitzchak bar Nachman v'amila Rav Shem bar Nachman chad amar kememre d'hai psukah v'chad amar. Okay, a number of versions of who said it together with in conjunction with whom, but in any event, one is of the opinion that it takes the amount of time to say the entire pasuk, and another opinion is not the entire pasuk. So first of all, what's the pasuk? The Gemara quotes it. It's from Divrei Hayamim. Pasuk reads, V'chol b'nei Yisrael, roim, beredes ha'esh u'chvod Hashem al habayis, Vayichru apayim arza al haritzpa v'ishtachavu v'hodos Hashem kitov ki le'olam chasdo. Okay, ki le'olam chasdo. Fine. So either it's the amount of time that it takes to read that entire pasuk, or starting from the point of vayichru. In any event, that's the time interval, and that's the amount of time that one would be chayiv if he becomes tameh while inside the azara, and doesn't walk out right away, but just stands there. So again, now let's just quickly recap. What do we have right now in the Gemara? If you're tummy before entering into the Azara and you walk into the Azara while tama, then there is nothing to talk about in terms of interval, in terms of time. In other words, just the act of walking in by itself creates a chiyuv. If you do so by a shogeg, you're going to be chayv karban olav yared. If you do so by mezid, you're going to be chayv karis. That part's clear. Our discussion from where we started this morning to this very point in time is talking about where you become tame in the Azara. And now from when you become tame in the Azara, so now we're talking about an exit immediately. If you linger and you do not exit immediately, you're going to be chayv, but under the circumstances where either A, you just linger the amount of time that it takes to say that pasuk that we just quoted, either the entire pasuk or part of the pasuk, or B, you do a significant act of bowing. Even if you do it quickly, as long as it's a significant act of bowing, that's also considered an act of lingering. and significant act of bowing. Again, I'm just saying the Gemara like Rashi, where you bow in a westward direction. Tanu Rabbanan. Gemara here, Gemara, you're going to see this Gemara a couple times throughout Shas. We're now describing various postures of bowing. Okay? Our bowing positions. Kida. Al apayim. So the act of kida is basically where your face is now facing the ground. So basically you're bracketing your body in a perpendicular position. V'chein omer v'tikot b'sheva apayim apayim eretz. So you see b'sheva, her face is to the ground. So okay, so I imagine, I think, it's basically you're perpendicular. Right? The top portion of your body now is facing to the ground. Kriya al birkayim. Kriya is on your knees. Now, again, not perfectly clear to me if your knees are actually touching the ground or just simply a bending of the knees. But in any event, the word korea means to bend, and the Gemara here describes it as being on your knees. V'cheinu omer, machro al birkav. On your knees. Sounds like your knees are on the floor. And then finally, the third bowing position, ishachava, zupishi yadam vergalayim. So that's a full bow, meaning that you're totally flat with the floor, parallel with the floor, your entire body. V'cheinu omer, havonavo anivi yimachava achichal ishachava secha artsa. Yaakov says to Yosef, you know, me, your mother, your brother, your siblings, we're not all going to bow to you. You see the word ishachava, and you see the word artsa, meaning that our entire bodies are on the floor. It sounds like the entire body's parallel with the floor. By Rava. Okay, and from here going forward, as now we're entering into today's daf, the Gemara is going to be asking a series of questions. Most of the questions the Gemara is going to be leaving unresolved. Question number one of the Gemara, Tzarech Shehiel HaMalkus or Ain Tzarech Shehiel HaMalkus? Okay. Up until now, our discussion has been the Shogig discussion. You become Tameh in the Azara. And now, unbeknownst to you, now you're Tameh, you do not make an immediate exit of the Azara area, but you linger. What if we're not talking about Bishogeg? What if somebody, after upon seeing you become tummy, says to you, hey, your tummy, out. Get out now. And with the proper warning, and says, you know, it's a violation of the Torah, it's an issue in the Torah, it's a law of the Torah, and if you don't exit right now, you're going to be subject to Malkus. So here under these circumstances, is there now the same Shehiya time interval consideration that we talked about previously, or no? Meaning, first of all, where is this time interval coming from? The answer is very simple, Talacha Moshe Misinai. Meaning it's a shear, it's an amount. In this case, it's an amount of time. So like all shearim in the Torah, Talacha Moshe Misinai. Basically, and the Gemara is going to spell this out. Basically, the question now is as follows. We know there's a Halacha Moshe Misinai. The question on the table is this Halacha Moshe Misinai specific to a Shogeg scenario? Or does it even include a Mazid scenario as well? Gemara asks exactly this question. Tzarech Shehiel HaMalkus, or Ain Tzarech Shehiel HaMalkus, the carbon Gemir Shehiel, HaMalkus lo Gemir Shehiel, is the Gemiri, is the Halacha Moshe Misinai specific only to a carbon, or does it even include Mazid as well? Odilma, we're on the very top of Zayin Amud Aleph. Odilma Bifnim Gemir Shehiel, lo Shnal HaKarbon, lo Shnal HaMalkus. Or maybe no. The Halacha Moshe Misinai is for the Pnim, is for the interior, meaning for the Azara. And is it just simply the case that regardless of whether it's Shogeg or Mazid, if you're Shoah, you're going to be Chayev. Whatever you're going to be Chayev, if it's Shogeg, it'll be Karban. If it's Mazid, it'll be Malkus. Or if you're not Shoah, you're not going to be Chayev. So the Gemara leaves this first question unresolved. By Rava, question number two. Tala Atzma Ba'avir Azara. Let's say you suspend yourself within the airspace of the Azara, meaning you're not on the ground floor. You're above the ground floor. Okay, back in Malkus and Dafe, we talked about flying camels. So, okay, we don't have to be that, we don't even need to be that creative. You're just simply not on the ground floor. So, is the liability for being in the Azara simply going to be on the floor itself? Or as long as you're anywhere within the airspace, you're going to be chayev. So, Tala Atma Ba'avi Azara Ma'oki Gamiri, this halacha lamoshi misinai of Shehiya, Ishiya Dabas Yishtachava, Dalab Bas Yishtachava lo Gamiri, is it subject to, is it connected to bowing? And as we just pointed out, what does bowing mean? By definition, bowing means artsa, on the floor. And so that means to say that if you're in the airspace, but you're not on the floor proper, so that means now that you can't, by definition, do hishtachavaya al ha'aretz. And so what the Gemara now is entertaining is the idea that since it's not the kind of Shia that could result in hishtachavaya, so therefore, one is not going to be subject to, there's no Shia element if you are in the airspace. But is the shear connected to being on the ground? That's what the Gemara's question is. Odilma bifnim shia gemiri, or maybe no, maybe the shihia requirement is that the shear interval is going to be as long as you are interior, and regardless of whether or not you're on the ground floor or you're above the ground floor. Huh? No, that's a Gemara, that's exactly the Gemara's question. Meaning you're only going to be chayv a carbon.
Let's say he was there.
That's a Gemara's question. That's a Gemara's question.
Is the question is how long he has to be in Davir, or is the question whether Davir Gufa he is a chayv a carbon?
It sounds like from the Gemara that he's going to be chayv a carbon. It's just a question now: is
that's
the, is there?
He's chayv a carbon just for how long he has to be there?
I think so. I think so. And it's just now a question of whether or not there's going to be a shihia interval for being in the Avir. And the Gemara says, Lo shan debasi shachava, lo shan dla basi shachava. Take it with the Gemara leaves this question also unresolved. By Ravashi, another question of the Gemara, Time atzma b'mezid. Up until now, the scenario has been that he bumps into a sheretz. And that didn't happen by design, that didn't happen intentionally. And now, having bumped into a sheretz, so now he can't just simply linger. Lingering is going to create now a liability, but only after he's lingered. How much time? Again, the amount of time that we described earlier, the amount of time it takes to say that pasuk, either its entirety or part of the pasuk. Gemara now says, let's just change the case altogether where he sees the sheretz and intentionally touches the sheretz while in the azara. Obviously, he shouldn't have done that. Is this person now going to be afforded the shihia period of time? Or is this liability going to come about now immediately? Mahu. Ba'onis gemir shihia, b'mezid lo gemir shihia, o'dilma b'fnim gemir shihia, lo shnan ba'onis v'lo shnan b'mezid. Is the shihia interval given for the individual who ones, accidentally bumps into a sheretz, then he's given the shihia period? Or maybe no. Maybe the shihia period is given for anybody and everybody. Even for this individual who clearly is not showing a lack of reverence to the azara, sees the sheretz, touches the sheretz, knowing the result is that he's going to become tamei. Maybe he too is also given the shihira interval as well. Take with the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. By Ravashi, Nazir bekever, by Shila Makos o ein utzarech. Okay, we have the Gemara now has the following question. Now I'm going to set up the question like Rashi. Rashi says like this. Look, we know that a nazir, once accepts naziris upon himself, can't eat anything which is a derivative of a grape product, cannot cut his hair, and can't become exposed to tumas mace. And so that means, of course, that a nazir can't go to a cemetery. Pasha. Now, the description over here of the Gemara, the question of the Gemara over here is as follows. The nazir puts himself in a some sort of shita teva migdal, some sort of chest, which will protect him from the tumma. It is encasing him with a roof on the bottom, roof on the top, and roof on and walls on the side. And in the Shita Teva Migdal now is brought into the cemetery. Again, motivation over here doesn't interest me. I don't care why he's doing it. Okay, for whatever reason, whatever the motives are behind this. And now, while in the cemetery, somebody now opens up the Shita Teva Migdal. So now we have a scenario in which he didn't defile by walking in, but rather he now finds himself inside. This is very similar to the case of the person becoming Tame in the Azara, where he touches the sheretz while in the Azara. So now as the Gemara's question goes as follows. We know that in the Azara, if he walks out immediately, so he's going to be saved from any chiyuv. If shogeg, he's not going to be chayv karmen olav yored, and at least according to one side, he will even be saved from Malkus if he leaves immediately. Gemara's question over here now goes to the Nazir. For the Nazir now, if he finds himself in this unusual circumstance where he now is exposed to the cemetery, meaning he's brought in tumma free, while now in the cemetery, somebody now opens up the chest in which he's in. So now, is he given the time interval to leave or no? His chiv is going to come out immediately. Rashi points out over here. We're not talking about a carbon. We're not talking about shogeg. There's no carbon for the nazir. Rashi, just give me one second. Rashi says, yes, the nazir who becomes tummy has to bring a carbon. But Rashi points out, that's only so that he can jumpstart his naziris once they're new. But in terms of becoming Tameh, there is no carbon for becoming Tameh. So we're not talking about carbon, we're only talking about Malchus over here. Is there going to be now this interval period of time in which allows them to leave and not be subject to Malchus?
What is this act?
The act is lingering in the cemetery.
Is that a lav?
Lav Shem B'Maisa, okay, could be. It could be. But in other words...
And also the Hatzra could be a subject also.
Well, I mean, the Hatzra is that if you stay here, you're going to be subject to Malchus. So, and again, Gemara keeps formulating the question in a similar fashion. We have a halach l'moshe misinai, we all know that. That's the starting point of the discussion. Is the halach l'moshe misinai specific to the azara, or does it also translate to these kinds of scenarios as well? Or no, maybe the Shihia Halacha L'Moshe Misinai is for anyone who finds himself in a scenario in which he is now located in Tuma, and now it's just a question of exiting that scenario. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about the person who becomes Tameh in the Azara, or we're talking about the Nazir who becomes Tameh in the Beis HaKvaros. Teku, again, the Gemara leaves this question unresolved as well. Balo Ba'aruka Chai B'Ksar Pat, and we move on to the next part of the Mishnah, and now... This is part two of our discussion for today. Part one of our discussion is lingering. Just by simply not exiting immediately and by just standing there, so a person is going to be chayiv. Again, either it's an interval of time as we described earlier, or while standing there, he does a significant bowing. But in any event, he's going to be chayiv. Let's set this up as a shogeg scenario where he comes into contact with the tumah. He didn't walk out right away. He didn't know he was tameh. And he lingered. So up until now, we talked about an interval of time. Now, from this point going forward, the second half of today's daf, we're talking about where he does walk out, but he doesn't take the straight path out. Right? Quickest distance, shortest distance, I should say. Between two points is a straight line. So right now, he doesn't go in that straight line, but he takes a circuitous route as he's exiting, the scenic route. So by taking the scenic route and exiting, so he's going to be chayav for that as well. To which now the Gemara discusses. Well, that's what the Mishnah told us. The Mishnah taught us, Balo ba'aruka chayiv, b'ktsara pater. So we're no longer in a Shia discussion. We're just simply in a, look at that path that he's exiting. Straight path, he's good. Path that is not straight, so then he's going to be subject to a liability. Amarava. Ketsar sha'amar afilu akev b'tzad goda v'afilu kol hayam kula. So Rava says, now that he's walking out, so it doesn't matter what kind of pace he's using to walk out. It could be the slowest walk known to man. And Rava describes, actually, where the heel of each step only arrives at the toe of his other foot. So if you can imagine such a painfully slow walk out, as long as he's walking, it's good. It could take the entire day, says Rava. But as long as he's walking, he's in a good position. And walking, and a straight line out.
The shortest way.
It reminds me, this Gemara over here reminds me of the Gemara in Chulin. Gemara in Chulin talks about, you know, there's another area in Halacha where we talk about Shihia, where we're talking about where there's a delay, and that's by Shechita. Right, by Shechita, when you shecht an animal, so there are five psulim, there are five disqualifications of a Shechita, so one of them is Shihia, which means that while the Shochi now has the knife and is going across the neck of the animal with the knife, if he pauses, so then that will disqualify the Shechita. The Shechita is no good, the animal is not considered shechted, it's a nevela, etc., etc. So the Gemara in Chulin says, it's in the first parak, I don't remember which staff, but the Gemara in Chulin says that even if it's a really dull knife, it's going to be a little bit cruel, but even if it's a dull knife, but as long as the blade is going back and forth in a continuous fashion, so that's not considered shihia. Even if it takes all day. I realize what I just described does not sound humane, but I'm just saying over the halacha. It's similar over here. Meaning as long as, but again, I know we're not talking about shihia, we're talking about just simply the walk out. As long as the walk out is in a constant motion, even if it's slow, even if it's painfully slow, even if it takes the whole day, so then he's going to be safe from liability. By Rava, shihia ma'usha yitzarfu. So the Gemara says, now, what about this? What about as he's walking out, takes coffee breaks? Now, sorry. Me and coffee. It's an unhealthy relationship. So now we already know that there is a time interval in order to be chayv. We already discussed that earlier this morning. What the Gemara wants to now know is that whatever that unit measurement is, just for the purposes of discussion, let's say it's 30 seconds. It's less, but significantly less. But let's say it's 30 seconds. Let's say as he's walking out, so he walks out, but he just takes little breaks, 5-second breaks. And he takes, let's say, 6 of those 5-second breaks. Can they now be mitzarev? Can they combine in order to get him to the shear of shihia? So the Gemara says, v'tiv shalei medideya, so hasam b'dol shah. Now the Gemara says, well, what you just described now, the guy taking the whole day to walk out. So doesn't that answer your question? The Gemara says, of course it doesn't answer your question. Because in that scenario, he's in a continuous motion out. Shihia means a full pause. So it doesn't matter how long it is, or what the Gemara is asking is maybe it does, but in other words, if you stop, that's shihia. As long as you are in motion, slow as it may be, that's not shihia. So the Gemara says, so from the scenario you painted of painfully slowly walking out, we can't answer our question of whether or not miniature pauses can add one to another. Okay, next question of the Gemara. Let's say like this. Right now, let's put him at a certain point in the Azara. It doesn't matter where he is. And now let's look at that straight line to get out. In a normal walk that it would take him to get out, let's say it would take him a total of 10 seconds to walk out. On a normal path, in a normal gait. Okay? Again, I'm throwing out numbers just so that we can have this discussion. So let's say now it takes him 10 seconds. Now he decides, you know what? I'm going to take the scenic way out, but I'll be quick. And he takes the scenic way out, and it takes him 10 seconds to do so because he hustled. Is under those circumstances now, did he save himself from the chiyuv? Because in terms of time, it would have been the same amount of time. Now, I know, as we all know. In other words, if he take that straight path and he would have ran, obviously it would have been quicker. But that's not the Gemara's question. The Gemara's question now is that in a straight path out, on a normal normal pace, so does that now become the standard in which now, as long as he gets out within that time frame, is he going to save himself a liability? That's the Gemara's question. Shir gemiri v'chi bala baruka shir katsar pater, odim adavka gemiri baruka chai b'katsar pater. So do we say that as long as he gets out in a considerate amount of time, he's going to be pater, even though he ends up taking a scenic route? Or the Gemara says, maybe no. Maybe the way to learn the Mishnah is just simple, a literal reading of the Mishnah, which is, you take the short way out, you're good. You take the long way out, I don't care how you hustle. You took the long way out, and therefore you're going to be chayv. Amar leih lo nidna aruka lihidakos etzlo. Answer, as long as you take the long way out, you're going to be chayv. Even if you hustle, even if you move, you're going to be chayv. Okay. Maska the Rabbi Zera. Now,
Abaya said that this aruch, the katsura, is not time sensitive.
The question is, maybe it is.
But he himself said it's not. You can go all day as long as you're going.
Yeah, but I see. In other words, so you're arguing that there we clearly demonstrate that time is no longer part of this equation.
That's what Abaya said.
Right. Okay. I hear your point. Okay. Okay, so right. So the Gemara right now is taking the position very clearly that time, once you're walking out, time no longer becomes a factor, and short path, you're good. Long path, you're not good. So Maskel Reb Zera. So Reb Zera says, ask the following question. Now, admittedly, this little bit of Gemara over here is a bit tricky. So I'll try to navigate us through this well. I'll try. Okay. We know, let's start off like this. We know that if a person is Tameh before entering into the Azara and simply takes a step into the Azara, he's Chayev. Okay, I've said that already a number of times. In other words, by defiling the Azara, by walking in, you're going to be Chayev, and that's going to be immediate. And when we say Chayev, we mean, again, if it's Shogeg, you're going to be Chayev Karban Ola V'yored. If it's Mezid, you're going to be Chayev Kares. That part's clear. Clear. Now we're talking about a scenario in which you find yourself in the Azara and you become Tameh in the Azara. And now we said, either with shihia or by not taking the shortest route out, you're going to be chayiv. And again, what does chayiv mean? Shogig, you're going to be chayv carbon olav yorid. Mezid, you're going to be chayv kares. Okay. We also have another halacha to take into consideration. And that is that if you have a kohen who's tamei, who does the avoda, he's going to be chayev, not kares, but misa bidei shamayim. Now that's one step short of kares, but still, it's not the same punishment. It's a different punishment. We also know there's a halacha that if a kohen does the avoda while tamei, he's going to be chayev misa bidei shamayim. So basically the Gemara says, now let's think this through. How can the kohen tamei find himself in the azara and trip up on doing the avoda while being tamei, but not trip up on lingering or not taking the shortest path out of the azara? Meaning, how can he only get misa bidei shamayim and not kares? Now, obviously, I'm just going to state the obvious. We don't want any of this. This is not, right? The Gemara is not condoning any of this. But the Gemara is saying that there is a misa bidei shamayim punishment. How can anyone ever get the misa bidei shamayim punishment and not get the kares penalty? That's what the Gemara is essentially asking. Now, Hadakai Malan, Tamei Sheshimish B'Misa, that if I have a Kohen who's Tamei, who serves in the Beis HaMikdash, he's going to be Chayav Misa B'Dei Shamayim. Hechi Mishkach Allah. The Gemara says, where does it come about? Idolosha Hechi Avid Avoda. So, if he wasn't Shoeh, meaning if he's just walking straight out, there's no time to do any Avoda. And Idoshaeh, and if he's lingering, Bar Karisu. So he's gonna trip up now on the kares penalty. Meaning, and we're looking for a scenario where he doesn't get the kares penalty and he's only getting misa b'dei shamayim. But to get misa b'dei shamayim, he's got to do avoda. But to do avoda by definition means he's gonna be lingering. So where's the sweet spot where he's gonna only get misa b'dei shamayim? Iyamar bishlam ashira gemira mishkach Allah da anas nafshe b'ktsar v'avad avoda. So the Gemara says, now, on the question you asked just a moment ago, where we talked about him hustling his way out of there, where we at least entertain the possibility that even if he takes a scenic route, but he hustles, he'll be good. Now, the Gemara ended up not liking that. Rabbi Zera said, Rabbi Zera gave a very clear answer. Rabbi gave a very clear answer. Rabbi didn't like that. Rabbi said that, as long as you're taking a circuitous route out of there, you're going to be chayv even if you hustle. But if we can just for a moment ignore Rabba's position and argue that hustling out of there is going to save you from a kares liability, so the Gemara says, so then we got it. We got a case. He'll do some sort of quick avoda, and then he'll hustle his way out of there. Where we argue I know Rabba doesn't like this, but we argue that as long as he's hustling out of there, so he'll be good. Meaning he won't get the kares penalty. So that would be a scenario where he'll get the misa penalty for a tamei doing the avoda, but he'll get saved from the kares penalty. So Ella, but as we turn now to your Zayin Amud Beis, Iyamar Dafka Gemiri, Hechi Mishkach Allah. But the Gemara says, but if you go with Rabba's answer, that the moment he takes any step in any other direction other than his way out, so then he's going to be chayv, and it doesn't matter whether he hustles or he doesn't hustle. So under those circumstances, just by him pausing to do the avoda, taking a step in another direction to do the avoda, by definition now he's going to be chayv kares. And where do we have a scenario and he's going to get misa b'dei shamayim? So the Gemara says, Hechem mishkach ala, amar Abaye, my kushya. So Abaye says, I don't find this to be so difficult. Mishkach ala kegon shabab b'ktsar v'hafach b'tzinor rochid rav huna. Damar rav huna zar shahafach b'tzinor chayv misa. So the Gemara says, look, flip the burger. Flipping the burger. Now, I know. You're passing by the mizbech, so we know that on the mizbech, so all the of a carbon ola, the entire animal is put up onto the mizbech to be burned. The shlam and parts of it are put on the mizbech. Same thing with the chatas, parts of it are put on the mizbech. But anyway, the parts that go onto the mizbech need to be burnt. Now the hector chalavim v'imurim. The burning is, generally speaking, done over the course of the night. But, in other words, it's part of the avoda. Part of the avoda is the burning of the limbs and the fats of karbanos. If you take that limb and flip it to its other side so that it's going to burn on the other side, so that's part of the avoda, and you're going to be chayev. So the Gemara over here says that according to Rav Huna, if I have a non-kohen in the azara who flips one of the limbs so that the other side gets burnt, that's considered an avoda, he's going to be chayev. Gemara says here too, the Kohen Tamei, where he becomes Tamei in the Azara and walks straight out and doesn't even need to stop or pause. He could just simply, while walking out, assuming that the Mizbeach is in that line of exit, simply pass by the Mizbeach, take a fork, flip over the piece of meat to the other side, and that's it. And now he has exited as quickly as possible, in the shortest path as possible, and at the same time done a nevoda while being tamei. That would be a scenario in which he could receive the misa penalty and not receive the karis penalty based on this ruling of Rav Huna. I was thinking about that. The total height of the Mizbeach is 10 amas, but really it's 9 amas because it's only the kronos which are 10 amas high. So 9 amas in the air. So for me, I understand that's very difficult. But with a fork long enough, though, he could do it.
He became too way on top.
Or he becomes tummy while on top of the Mizbeach. That could be also. Could be. Gufa Amar Rav Huna, the Gemara says, look, as long as we quote the statement to Rav Huna, the Gemara says, let's just go back, let's hit it one more time. Zar Shafach Bitsinor, Chayv Misa, if I have a non-Kohen who flips over any of the limbs on the Mizbeach, he's going to be Chayv Misa. Hey, Chidami Idala Afach La Ma'akle Pshita. So the Gemara says, Rav Huna is obviously trying to teach us a Chiddush. What's the Chiddush? Meaning if without flipping it over, the fire is not that strong, and without flipping over, the other side wouldn't have been burnt, then I don't need Rav Huna to teach me anything. Clearly, the act of flipping it over is a significant act. Of course, he's going to be chayev. And if the fire is really good, and if he would have left that limb on, it would have burnt both sides, even without flipping it. So then what did he do? Why should his act be significant? So the Gemara says, So the Gemara says, here's what happens, or here's what will happen. If he doesn't flip it over, it will burn. It'll take 2 hours. If he flips it over, it'll burn. It'll take 1 hour. And here's what Rav Huna is teaching us. That expediting avoda is considered avoda. The avoda would have happened with or without you. But if you expedite the process, that's also considered an avoda. And you're going to be chai for that as well. Rav Oshia says, I want to say something, but I'm scared of what my friends are going to think. Now, generally speaking, the Tanaim and the Amoraim do not seem to be that concerned about public opinion. And he's not, and peer pressure. That's generally speaking not one of their concerns in life. In high school, that may be a concern, but no, it's not for Tanaim and Amoraim. Over here, obviously, he's not worried about what his friends are going to think in terms of peer pressure or public opinion. In other words, when he's talking about his friends, he's talking about the other Talmidei Chachamim in the Beis Medrash. And what he's going to say now to him is going to represent a tremendous Chiddush, and he knows that the Chiddush is not going to be accepted. Right? You're in the Beis Medrash, you have experience being in the Beis Medrash, you know that sometimes you say things which are easily accepted and acceptable to hear, and you know you say things sometimes that are going to be radical. And are going to not land well and not going to sit well with people and are going to be controversial. That's what he's describing over here. He's describing that what he's going to say is it represents a chiddush, and he knows that it's not going to be super accepted, but he's going to say it anyway. So let's hear it. Hanichnas lebeis hamenuga, you go into a house that has tsaras. The house that has tsaras, of the three different types of tsaras, it's the third one mentioned in Parshas Mitzora, right? There is nige adam, nige begadim, nige batim. A tsaras that can afflict an individual, or his clothing, or the house. The house is subject to tsaras, so we know that anything that's in the house is subject to tumah. So, which is going to be either kalim, or it could be even a person as well. And here now is his really radical statement. Hanichlan sabeit samanuga, if you go into a house with tsaras, derech achor, but you're walking backwards. Ve'afilu kula chutz michotmo. And the majority of your body is inside, except for your nose. So tahor, so under those circumstances, you're not going to be tamei. Why? Because when the Torah describes a person going into the house, the Torah talks about bia, entrance. Entrance, as he understands it to be, the normal entrance, meaning walking in forward. Derech bia asra Torah. But so the Torah talks about being there, it's talking about derech bia. Now, I'm going to try to be clear. For simply being in the house itself, you're going to become tamei. That's clear. Meaning, the Torah says, Rashi brings this down. The Torah says that before the Kohen renders an opinion on the house, ufinu asabais. You take everything from the house and you bring it out. Because anything that is actually in the house, just simply by being in the house, is going to make it tummy. So, for once the person enters into the house, or let me say it better. Once the person is in the house, regardless of how he walked in, he's going to become tummy. That's part clear. So over here, however, there's another way of becoming tummy, and that's through entrance, upon entrance. What Rav Oshi is saying is that entrance is very specifically defined. Entrance has to be walking in forward, not backwards. Walking in backwards is not considered bia, and so upon becoming tummy for entrance, walking in backwards does not become tummy. Once you're fully in the house, doesn't matter how you walked in there. Forward, backward, you're going to become tummy just by simply being in the house. But we're talking about the tumah of bia, of entrance. And so he's arguing now that if you walk in backwards, even if, as long as there's any portion of your body that is not in, you're not going to be chayiv tumas bias, bsol, unless you walk in forward. So and now I know what my friends are going to say, is that that's true, then even if you fully enter, you're going to be tame. But again, based on the distinction I just pointed out, Rav Oshia says there's a difference between walking in versus being inside the house. Now Rav says, now being in the house is no different than a kli. The Gemara is quoting the second half of the Pasuk. First half of the Pasuk says that if you want to take everything out, so it doesn't become tummy, meaning that any kli that's just simply in the house is going to be subject to tumma. Tanya mihachi. And now what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to support Rav Oshia based on a brisa. Gagan halalu ein ochlin sham kachim kadashim ein shochtin sham kachim kalim v'tami shenichnas derech gagan laheichal patur shenemar ve'la mikdash lo savo derech bia asur Torah. If you are not on the ground floor of the Azara, you are on a gag, on a second floor. There's a whole bunch of buildings around the Azara, which have a first and second floor. First floor, considered like the Azara. When we see Midos, we're going to see that even within these rooms within the walls, part of them are considered part of the Azara, part of the room is considered outside the Azara. Right? The base Mokad is what comes to my mind right now. We'll talk about it more when we get to Masechta Midos. But anyway, if you're not on the ground floor, but you're on the second floor, you're not considered in the Azara. And so therefore, you can't eat kachim. Now when I say can't eat, I'm talking to the Kohanim, Zichri Kohuna. Eating the carbon chatz is only done in the Azara, but you have to be on the ground floor. You can't shecht. Shechting has to be done in the Azara. If the animal is above the ground in the Azara, so once again, you can't shecht over there. If you're tame and you walk in through this gag, you're not going to become tame. I'm sorry, you're not going to be subject to the chiyuv kares for walking in. So patur shenemar velamikdash lo savo, and exactly as Rav Oshia described, the person walking into the house of tzara'as. Similarly, over here we're going to be darshing in a similar manner. You didn't walk in the normal entrance. Derech bi'asra Torah. The only time a person is going to be chayiv is he walks in the normal manner, meaning walking in through the ground floor. Once you're walking in from the second floor down in, that's not considered derech bia. Now again, like we just described over the course of today's daf, you're going to be chayiv for lingering or for not taking the shortest path out of there, but for the bia itself, for the entrance, you're not going to be chayiv unless you walk in a normal manner. Okay. And this is supportive of the quote-unquote radical statement of Rav Oshia. Okay, still we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up at the two dots. Today we have discussed entirely, Yud Zayin of Shavuos, almost entirely, is a discussion of what if you become Tamei, not before going into the Azara, but while in the Azara, and then an ensuing discussion of the Gemara of at what point in time you're going to be Chai. There's a Halach L'Moshe M'Sinai about lingering in that time. So it can manifest in one of two ways, either through Shehiya, meaning just simply by staying put. Now, Shia in of itself could be broken down into two, either just simply standing there or standing there and doing something significant, a hashtachavaya, a bowing. And as we described earlier this morning, bowing in the west direction, like Rashi said, not in the east direction. Or the other way to manifest a chiyuv is by not taking the straightest path out. If you take the straightest path out, So you're gonna be putter, even if you're slow, even if you're painfully slow, you're gonna be putter. But once you take a circuitous route out of there, so you're gonna be chayiv, then that's another way to create a chiyuv if you become tameh while in the azar. That's been our discussion on the course of today's daf.